Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Catola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Catola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. I'm Kim Catola, and the purpose of our program is preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. And sometimes our guests are very straightforward, and we have a really clear picture as to what the connection is between preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. Other times it's a little more subtle, but boy, today I cannot think of anybody that we've had as a guest recently who better fulfills this mandate that we have of helping to prevent abortion than today's guest, Kim Wilson. She's the founder of the Loretta Johnson Global Abstinence Project, and as such, she is deeply engaged in the work of training young people for a lifestyle of abstinence. Kim earned her B.S. in marketing from Indiana University, and she has an MBA from Clark Atlanta University in Atlanta. And she and her husband live in Peachtree City. She's my neighbor, although we haven't met yet, Kim, on our golf carts or anything. So Kim enjoys spending time with her family, giving and witnessing to others in honor of Christ, traveling, relaxing at the beach, when she's not, working diligently in this area of the Global Abstinence Project. Kim, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Well, thank you so much, Kim. I really appreciate you having me as a guest on your show and able to share about the abstinence program that we have.
Well, and I know that as an adjunct professor for Regent University and Liberty University, two great organizations, that you have a teacher's heart. So you know, and you've also helped, I think, with something that is really lacking, which is helping people connect the dots between abstinence and all sorts of societal problems, not just individual relationship problems. But talk about the areas that you see that you can clearly discern a need for abstinence teaching, and then a societal problem such as poverty or even low self-esteem, breakdown of the family.
Absolutely. Well, the Loretta Johnson Global Abstinence Project, we focus on promoting abstinence typically or especially to Black and Hispanic women and girls, not eliminating anyone, of course, but Black and Hispanic women and girls, as you know, do not receive promotion of abstinence nearly as much in those communities, but they need it the most. Reason being is because the number one killer of Black females in the age of 24 to about 35 is HIV and AIDS. And what we look at there, in addition to that, that's so important is that 70% of Black children are born outside of wedlock. So if we begin to lose the Black females, who typically are mothers at that age, then these kids typically don't have a parent or someone who wants to raise them, because there's a great deal of fatherlessness there as well. And the same is happening with the Hispanic community, with Hispanic women and girls rapidly, and that is that they, too, about 50% of Hispanic children are born outside of wedlock, typically with the mother. So we're dealing with some major issues here as far as the breakdown, especially of Black and Hispanic families. And it's because we are losing so many mothers that are single parents, you know, to HIV and AIDS and things like that. What typically happens when we look at how abstinence is a solution to so many problems, I often talk about situations such as poverty, And what happens typically is that you have a single mom, and she typically has had her kids outside of wedlock, and she doesn't have anybody else there to help her. So in too many cases, you have it where a mother may have had four or five kids by three or four different men, and yet she's single and having to raise them on her own. So she's out working maybe two or more jobs, just trying to make ends meet and keep food on the table. What happens with that is that the kids obviously don't have the discipline or aren't able to be a discipline. They don't have stable home environment, and they are lacking in education because there's no one there really to help them with it, promote it, and so forth. So you see these kids that begin to turn to violence and crime, and many of them, because of the poverty level, many of the girls and boys turn to prostitution. Sex trafficking is now a big issue with that. And if you even see, Kim, with lately with all of the riots and so forth in Baltimore and Ferguson,
yes,
and different places,
mm-hmm,
like that, abstinence really is linked to that. Because typically what we're looking at are moms, single moms, that have these sons, and because they didn't practice abstinence, they had these children or these outside of wedlock. And there's no one there really to raise them because the moms are out working trying to feed them. And then these young men turn to crime. Next thing you know, they're in prison or, you know, they die prematurely because they're dealing with so many issues. And it's simply because there's no one really there to provide the discipline that they need and to ensure that they become productive, you know, members of society. So
wow,
you can
think,
link back abstinence to a lot of that, and it's not promoted nearly enough.
Well, I was going to say, to think that one training could could cure so many problems. And, you know,
yes.
I mean, I think that neglected children, it makes a lot of sense. If kids are neglected, if young girls are neglected, they're going to be doing what they shouldn't be. They should be doing,
mm-hmm,
you know, they're out looking for love in the wrong places, just maybe
That's
even
right.
looking for companionship, looking for company.
Absolutely.
So we've talked with other experts, Dr. Miriam Grossman and others, about all of the problems of early sexual debut. And is this because it's abstinence in young teens, or talk about the age issue here.
Sure.
Is it just something that we need to start talking about in middle school or even sooner, or is it all the way up through the young adulthood here?
Absolutely. It needs to. I recommend as early as 7 years old. Reason being, Kim, is because with the issue with sex trafficking now, I mean, they are basically pressuring or leading young people as young as 11 years old, boys and girls, 11, 13, 12, 13-year-olds, that they're beginning to recruit and, you know, are able to get them involved. And, again, a lot of that comes from kids coming from home where there is a lack of love and attention to them, as you say, and discipline and so forth, and teaching good moral values and so forth, and the lack of the parent being involved. So someone usually comes in and offers them the opportunity to make money, or they give them the attention they need. And again, you know, with things like that, it's very, very early that kids fall into those kinds of traps. So I recommend starting definitely in elementary school. As far as how old... As far as adulthood, based on the statistics now, we really have to keep promoting abstinence well into adulthood, because we're seeing that the number one killer, as I said, of black females between the age of 24 and 35 is HIV and AIDS. So we've got to continue to promote abstinence to them for them to see how they're destroying their lives and the lives of their kids. And, you know, that it is a life and death situation. So it's really, I would think we have to promote it consistently. And then, I hate to say this, but the statistics also show that more people over 50 are also not getting married and having sex outside of marriage. And I guess you would hope at that point they would be the ones teaching the younger ones not to do it, because they would know the negative consequences that come from it at that particular age. So we really have to keep promoting it, I think, from all age groups.
Mm. I remember reading a news story years ago about an STD epidemic in a retirement community. And, you know, it sounds like a joke. It sounds like a setup for, you know, a punchline, but it's not funny at all. And,
And
when you talk about, I became sexually active at age 19, and it was not a plan. Okay, I had a plan, which was I was going to remain pure, quote unquote, while I was under my parents' roof. And there were a lot of reasons why I was, you know, that was where I had landed with the decision in my own mind.
Right.
But once I left for college, I had no plan. And I think that's, you know, that this is what happens. Sometimes you're afraid of parental reprisals if you get caught, or you're just afraid, and maybe you wouldn't respect your parents' rules. But now you launch off, and if you're not thinking about it, or even, as you say, you know, with an older community, maybe your spouse has died, or something is a divorce, or something has thrust you back into the dating pool, and you don't have a plan. It's really sad how little is taught and how seldom it is actually discussed. So what's your way of reaching out? Because it's a huge job. And with the Loretta Johnson Global Abstinence Project, I know that you have a plan, and you have been working hard on getting this word out. What's your main method of doing that?
You know, when it started, Kim, it was really interesting. I knew a need. And by the way, Loretta Johnson is my late mother. And she had such a heart, great woman of God, and she had such a heart for helping single mothers, women, girls, and so forth, and those who had had, you know, children outside of wedlock and so forth. And she helped them, you know, with her own personal finances and time and so forth. And she was a nurse and even provided medical care for some of them that couldn't afford it. And so that's where I began to learn it from, or have a heart for it, was through her. And I was as early as 9 years old. She would take me around, you know, when she would go to visit different women and girls, you know, to provide help for them, or clothing or money or whatever the case would be. So I began to see it then, and I had a heart for it. And I continued to volunteer in different organizations with homeless women and children and things like that. But I think when it really hit me to start this organization or this project, was over 3 years ago, and I already had an outreach ministry that I started over 25 years ago, but this was actually born out of that. And it really got me when I started seeing the statistics, Kim. I mean, it really got me. And you want to talk about abortion, we can go there too, especially with the black females. One out of two black babies are aborted, you know, and which is devastating. And in some cases, it's 60% of them in certain areas. And so I began to see that. But then when I began to see the breakdown of black and Hispanic families, and with the single mothers and so forth, and just seeing the poverty and all the negativity and you know, negative consequences that come from it, that's when I began to say, okay, Lord, I want to do something with this. And what I initially started doing is I developed a workshop called Experiencing God's Best for Your Life Through Abstinence. And I began doing that workshop for different conventions and so forth, conferences, youth groups, women's conferences and so forth. And it got to be very popular here in the United States. And so I couldn't do them all myself, so there were people who wanted to have them done at their particular conferences and so forth. So I actually began to teach individually different ministry leaders, youth leaders, and so forth, how to give the workshop and giving them the materials and things like that. So that became very popular. But then what amazed me, too, and it has to be God, is that it actually spread. And I tell them this project has spread like wildfire, way above anything I could ask or imagine or handle alone these days. But a pastor from sub-Saharan Africa called me. And he found my information online. He said, you know what an issue we have with AIDS and HIV over here and out of wedlock births and so forth. And he said, I heard about your materials. I found them. And, you know, I would love for you to send them to over here so we can use them. And so I thought, okay, I'll mail you. I emailed him the workshop and so forth. And next thing I know, it's just real. They're giving it out like unbelievably to women and girls in those areas. And they began to, different churches and ministries began to actually adopt the Loretta Johnson Global Abstinence Project. And we're doing the workshop in those countries. So it was interesting that now it began to spread so much that the workshop is actually being conducted in over about 20 countries. Three continents. We're in Asia, Africa, and North America. And we probably reach about 10,000 women and girls per month with the workshop information. So I thank God for that, and I didn't expect it. And we're probably working now with about 300 churches and ministries, missionaries, youth group leaders, things like that, that are actually given the workshop over there in those particular countries as well. And even to the point that they've started Loretta Johnson Global Abstinence Project homes, where they actually go out and evangelize and witness to girls on the streets and so forth, and that are prostitutes and things like that, and promote abstinence. And the girls actually come back and stay, you know, with these particular churches or ministries for a while, and they teach them different skills and so forth to be able to give them an alternative of, you know, making money and not being on the streets and so forth, or prostituting themselves. And, and you know, I get information about them and bios and so forth, and they keep me posted. So God has just blessed amazingly, you know, even to that degree. But once I did, was conducting the workshops, and it began to spread like it did, when I would do it, a lot of people would ask me, you know, Kim, we really want to keep this information. We really want to be able to give the girls or the women a copy of the information that you share, because so many of the things that you suggest are really necessary. And so then I wrote a book called The Abstinence Handbook for Women and Girls. And I made it very simple, very direct, and actually provided it for churches and ministries free of charge. And so, again, that really took off as well. And the distribution of that book has gone extremely well. And now we have it in CD, audiobook form, as well as the Spanish version and the English version.
That's awesome. So, and, of course, we'll have that linked at cradlemyheart.org for sure, so people can know how they can get a copy. But, Kim, as we're talking about this and trying to put together a handbook, do you think most people just need the information, for example, of their risk for HIV, AIDS, and other sexually transmitted diseases? Or do they need equipping for how to get out of that moment of truth when, you know, they're making that decision maybe too late? What is it that you think is the primary need for education when it comes to abstinence? And maybe it's different for women than it is for men.
You know what? With this particular book, what I found out after doing so many workshops and things like that, and research, primary, secondary, they need to know how to. It's amazing. They don't know how. Many of them don't know that it's a sin, you know, because they're not getting the information as far as from different churches and ministries, and so much they don't talk about it a lot, and with women and girls and so forth. And many have no clue that it's a sin based on the Word of God. And we're talking about Christians here, okay? Because in the Black and Hispanic communities, they're two of the most religious ethnic groups in America. They say that religion is more, over 80% of them say that religion is important to them, whereas in the entire United States, I think it's about maybe 50% of the people that say religion is very important. So they're very committed as far as to church going and things like that. They do that the most. And but yet and still, they're not taught as much in churches that, hey, this is a sin against God. In the book, in the Bible, in Revelations, in Galatians, and so forth, God talks about that and the consequences of going to hell for that particular sin. They have no clue. And then they don't have a clue as to how to actually avoid having sex before marriage. And I talk about that a great deal in the book. You know, what is true love? What type of men do you look for that you want to date or you want to marry? If they're pressuring you to have sex before marriage, you know, what do? You run. You get away from the situation. You know, teaching them what true love is based on God's definition of true love in 1 Corinthians, they have no clue about that. Many of them don't. You know, I ask them, well, how do you know if a guy really loves you? And, you know, they say, well, because he calls or, you know, he wants to be physical or whatever. That has nothing to do with true love. So being able to teach them things like that, also giving them alternatives. Many times they've got too much free time, especially those in low-income areas, because they don't have the options of, you know, going to play tennis or swimming lessons and things that you'll find in other areas or higher-income areas. So being able to make sure there are things for them to do, telling them, go volunteer at a hospital, at a senior care home, or, you know, have a hobby of exercising or playing a particular sport at school or making jewelry or taking art classes, things like that, things that they can begin to do to take up that spare time, which you know, is keeping them busy with positive things is really important.
Well, and if I may, Kim, I think, you know, families of all economic strata need to take that message to heart because, you know, Mom, if you're working and the home is empty after school,
yes,
it doesn't matter if you're bringing home a giant paycheck.
That's right.
I mean,
you're
kids are
going
to take the opportunity that's in front of them.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And that's a big issue when the kids are left alone, because that's when, you know, what is the saying that too much idle time is the devil's workshop or what have you, but if I got that right, but it's a lot of temptation that can come in, and there's no supervision, you know. And so those are things that they really have to look at. Also, in the book, I talk about the things that they need to focus on, what type of people they hang around, what types of places they go to, what types of things that they do, and, of course, praying for strength, you know, and in those times of temptation to have sex before marriage, for God to give you strength, to overcome those times of temptation and to get away from those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I really focus a lot on helping them to know how to actually avoid sex before marriage. And like you said, having that plan beforehand, not waiting until that temptation is right there in front of you, you know, and you fall for it. And then the next thing you know, you may end up with STD or unwanted pregnancy or whatever the case is, and it can happen so instantly, and it can just change your life. It will forever, and mm-hmm. The consequences can be very, very devastating in many cases.
Kim Wilson is our guest. She's the author of The Abstinence Handbook for Women and Girls Throughout the World, and she presents conferences. And I want to give you a chance to talk about an upcoming event that's going to be part of the Global Abstinence Project. But, you know, I want to come back to this statistic, and if you can mm-hmm. just put this in context for us. We've only got about 3 minutes remaining, so it's a big question, but if you can. The high number of HIV and AIDS among women.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think there's some ignorance at the heart of that. What do women need to know about their risk for HIV and AIDS?
You know what? One of the chapters in the book that I wrote, and sometimes it becomes more controversial when I talk about it, is stop blaming the men. I tell mm-hmm. women that, because I tell them, guys, you know, as my grandmother used to tell me, Kim, it's your responsibility to keep your legs crossed. And if you don't, well, you know, you've got to pay the consequences. I think that it starts there, Kim. I think women just have to start doing the right thing. And when men come at them, whether it's with pressure or, you know, the attention that they lack or whatever the case is, they really just have to be able to say no. And if they don't, if the men don't understand no, then you just leave them alone completely. Or the boys, whatever the case is. So that's a big part of dealing with the statistics as far as that's concerned. Now, I hate to say this, but in Black and Hispanic communities, many of the males are infected. And typically, Black and Hispanic males don't want to admit that they are bisexual or homosexual. So they don't tell, but they continue to have sex with these women. And the women continue to do it. So it's really, I think, to that degree, what they need to know is, you know, this is dangerous, and you need to say no. You need to walk away from it. You need to keep your legs crossed. And because it's a life or death situation at this point.
It's an issue in the heterosexual community as well as among homosexual men. I think that's the message I really want to leave people with. Well, Kim Wilson, thank you so much for joining us. Kim is the founder of God's Active People, GAP Ministries, and the GAP Conferences as part of the Loretta Johnson Abstinence, Worldwide Abstinence Project. And there are many opportunities for you to take advantage of her great resources and events and conferences. And we've got a link at cradlemyheart.org for Kim's ministry. Kim Wilson, thank you so much for joining us today.
You.
We really appreciate
thank
it.
You, I really appreciate you and all the great work you're doing. God bless you. And I know he's just going to continue to use you to do even greater things. And we just thank you for all you're doing for him. And thank you again
Amen.
For letting me be a part of your show.
May it be so. Thank you, Kim. Now stay with us here on Faith Radio. We'll continue with a discussion of the news of the week coming up here on Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
So glad to have you listening tonight. Thank you for being with us. And I hope that Mother's Day weekend, last weekend, was an enjoyable time for you, one filled with love and laughter and joy if you are a mother, and one filled with feelings of peace and comfort and a lack of anxiety if there aren't children in your life, or if there is a missing child in your life because of abortion. I know Mother's Day can be a really difficult holiday, but I hope that it was happy for you. And if not, I hope that by listening to this program tonight and week in and week out, we can lead you to some answers if you are troubled by an abortion in your past. Abortion has been in the news this week, and I would love for your opinion tonight on the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Act. That's something that the House of Representatives voted on, and now it will go to the Senate, and analysts say it doesn't have much of a chance there, and President Obama has promised that he will veto it. But what it actually is a ban on abortions after 20 weeks. It seems incredible to me that this bill, according to the analysts, doesn't have much of a chance of ever becoming law. H.R. 36 is the amendment number, because of the politics involved. When 64% of Americans agree that abortion should be unavailable after 20 weeks. What do you think about this? Do you believe that it's possible for the child to feel pain in the uterus, in utero before birth? And is the 20-week marker, does that satisfy you in terms of what you've been reading and the science that has been presented? Because there's some controversy over the scientific evidence. If you accept that premise that children before birth can feel pain at 20 weeks, do you think that that is a good dividing line to say that's reason enough that we should ban this procedure? Because as we reported when we were talking about this in other forums, that, you know, 22 weeks, 23, 24 weeks is the standard in many states. It's a state-by-state ruling at this point. That's why the House is bringing this up as a federal matter, so that it would be uniform policy across our nation. I think almost all of the European nations ban abortion after 13 weeks, if that provides some sort of a marker for you. But what do you think about this, about the idea of federally mandating that we protect the lives of children, unborn children, at 20 weeks? Our phones are open at 800-811-3003, and I would love to hear your thoughts. 800-811-3003 is our number. I read a fascinating article from Charles Camozzi, writing in The Atlantic. And he's been he has a book out. We've been trying to get him as a guest on the program. We may present him in the future. But Charles says that, look, there's really more consensus among American people, among American voters on this, than taking a look at the political landscape would have you believe. And so he says the fact that 61% of Americans believe that abortion should be broadly legal during the first trimester, but only 27% support the choice during the second, this 20-week ban should be a no-brainer. We're not even talking with this ban about making all abortions illegal. So what is the problem? And he has a pretty good cogent analysis in The Atlantic about, you know, well, it's about both parties behaving counter to what they really stand for. So typically Republicans are for less federal involvement, but they want a federal law on this issue. Typically the Democrats are for government having oversight of many aspects of our private lives, but in this case the Democrats say, no, this is an individual decision for women to make. So, you know, it's that theory is intriguing. But we come back to his primary point, which is, if most Americans agree on this, why are the politicians arguing it? 800-811-3003 is our number. 800-811-3003. We'd love to hear your opinions. And the ground rules here at Cradle My Heart Radio are that you do not need to give your name. And if you want to share your story, we'd love to hear your story. Whether or not you have received healing, whether or not you've been through a post-abortion Bible study, as we always recommend as a great way to get started with spiritual healing after abortion. Maybe you just have never shared your story with anyone, but you feel the need and you sense that we are a safe place for that. Would love to have a call from you tonight. 800-811-3003. Is our number, 800-811-3003, and we make that call a toll-free one for you, too. So please do call us. There's another story in the news that we could talk about, especially in light of our interview this week, our featured interview with Kim Wilson on abstinence. I mean, I had been trained to teach abstinence in the Georgia public schools, where the state legislature approved Choosing the Best, which is an evidence-based curriculum. And I then life intervened when I had planned to go ahead with the last phase of my training, which was to actually teach. And so I haven't yet had that classroom experience, but I'm very, very familiar with the curriculum. And even with that, I was just very surprised with Kim Wilson's analysis of all of the societal problems that stem from teen sexual activity, teen and young adult sexual activity outside of marriage. And if we can get this right and encourage young people to adopt abstinence as a lifestyle, she says, and I think she's right, we'll see so many problems recede. And yet, we still have people that are arguing that abstinence education isn't worthwhile and doesn't work, quote-unquote, doesn't work. There's a piece on Huffington Post today about a judge that has ruled that a particular curriculum wasn't acceptable, and so the headline says, Hero Judge Rules Abstinence-Only Sex Education Isn't Actually Sex Education. And I'm not familiar with the particular curriculum that they were discussing in this case in California, where Judge Donald Black ruled that Clovis Unified School District curriculum, which was abstinence-only focused, wasn't really sex education. But, wow, I mean, okay, to say that there's no value to it because a particular curriculum has some objectionable components, that's not really good journalism at all. And maybe they're just trying to be sensational with the headline there. But he ruled that this abstinence-only focused curriculum was not really sex ed, but it didn't meet the state's own guidelines, and it was providing medically inaccurate information, and also touted anti-gay, as he puts it, traditional family, quote-unquote, propaganda. The writer of this for Huffington Post is David Parkman, and he is a talk show host, too. And, you know, I can't agree with him, especially on the curriculum that I've been trained on. It's absolutely scientifically based. It's absolutely evidence-based. And the folks that have written that curriculum have been able to quantify great outcomes in the school districts where that curriculum has been taught in Georgia and elsewhere around the country. And in fact, all the way to, again, lots of unintended consequences from students choosing the abstinence lifestyle, including improved graduation rates. Well, I mean, on the face of it, that makes a lot of sense. But it's not the first thing most people would say. What must we do if we want more kids graduating? Well, let's teach them to be sexually abstinent. Let's teach them to wait until marriage. Let's teach them the benefit of making that choice within a different context than teen romance. But the evidence is there for that curriculum. So what do you think about this? Trashing abstinence education as being completely worthless? Of course, you know, a lot of people who are in favor of comprehensive sex ed, which has zero boundaries because it's based on the junk science that children are sexual from birth, and so they begin in among 5-year-olds in kindergarten with the indoctrination about how everything that anyone feels is natural and normal, or because it's natural, it's normal. Natural simply means it happened within nature. Of course, if you view that that's the desirable thing to be teaching young people, you're going to have an objection to saying, no, it's better to teach children to wait. And you might not believe it's possible that children could exercise self-control and be supported in a way that allows them to actually adopt again the abstinence lifestyle. What the evidence-based findings show us is that it's not a one and done. You can't have one unit in seventh grade and expect the students to remain abstinent through graduation. It has to be a consistent part of the curriculum year in and year out, beginning in middle school through graduation, which age-appropriate, increasingly informative curriculum along the way. You're not going to teach a high school senior the same thing that you are an entering a rising middle schooler. But consistently presenting the message year in and year out to the students has been shown to work. Again, not only to help them, you know, reduce the rates of teen pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases, but to improve graduation rates. Well, what do you think? 800-811-3003. And, you know, I've shared my story and different parts of my story and different parts of my life on this program, week in and week out. And yet, you know, when I was discussing with Kim Wilson how I sort of didn't have a good framework for making choices in my young adulthood, I was very chagrined to share that, because I think that that's a problem in my life. And I've received so much healing from the Lord, and I know that He's made me new. But it's hard to talk about the fact that at 19 I had no plan for my life. And so I just, by default, walked down a wrong path that the culture said was going to be okay for me. It was the right path. It was the path that was going to lead to happiness. To just go on in to the clinic there at college, get myself some birth control pills, and join the party with everybody else who was, you know, taking the offer of free love. It hurts me to have to say that was my choice. And I was surprised to feel that. And I had spent some time praying about it between the interview and now. And so I know it might be difficult for you to talk about this topic, even if you don't have an abortion in your past, because it is personal. And it's difficult if you're not happy with the choices you made in the past. But still, part of the reason why we do this is not only to bring glory to God's name, because He changes us and He makes us new and He makes us someone we never were. He makes us holy and acceptable in His sight. Oh, praise God, what a beautiful thing. But not only that, but I really do believe others can benefit from our mistakes. And that's part of the redemption, is to reach back to that person not yet on this road of relationship with Christ and share the hope that we have. Won't you do that with us tonight? 800-811-3003. It's always personal. That's the problem. Or that's the blessing. Or that's the thing. 800-811-3003. Call. Share your thoughts with us. Tell us your story. We'd love to hear from you tonight here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
So glad that you are with us tonight, and we're discussing a few things in the news this week. The phones are open for you at 800-811-3003. The GOP-led House of Representatives on Wednesday passed the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which would be effectively banning abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. And the GOP-led House approved similar legislation a couple of years ago, but at the time, it died in the Democratic-controlled Senate. Now, people are predicting that that may happen again, and the Obama administration has also threatened to veto the current bill. The Obama administration called it disgraceful, putting a definitive sunset on the prospects of the bill passing for the time being, according to the reporting here from TheGuardian.com. But early frontrunners for the Republican presidential nomination are backing it. Jeb Bush said he believes the bill to be humane and compassionate. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and Florida Senator Marco Rubio also have come out in favor of it. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul sought to reframe the issue last month. When he was asked about rape or incest exceptions, he said, you know, as reporters, why don't you ask the top Democrats if it's okay to kill a 7-pound baby in the uterus, which is, of course, legal federally in the United States because of Doe v. Bolton, that for any reason a child can be born up to birth. can be aborted up to birth. He was pointing that out. It's a fact many Americans don't know. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie once called himself pro-choice, eventually backed that proposal when the Susan B. Anthony list highlighted his silence on the issue, and that happened before the vote back in March. But it's unclear now if and when the Senate will take up the bill that passed the House last week. The Republican majority on its own wouldn't be enough to overcome a filibuster, even as South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who's weighing a political run, is pushing for a vote on his version of the bill. Spokesman for Mitch McConnell, Kentucky Republican, said the Senate Majority Leader supports the bill but had no schedule updates to report if and when a vote would be forthcoming. And so I'd love to hear what you think about this. Is this something that you would like to see become the law of the land? That 20 weeks would be the dividing line, and after that, abortion would be illegal. You know, some people still are concerned about cases of rape and incest, but the counter to that argument has been, you know, if a woman has been raped, by the time that she's 5 months pregnant, she ought to have been able to come to a decision based on that crisis that occurred 5 months earlier, and the same for the victim in the tragic cases of incest. Simply the fact that there was a crime that was committed around the conception of the child does not justify a late-term abortion when the child is viable in cases of birth after 24 weeks, but also capable of pain at 20 weeks. Tell me what you think of this. 800-811-3003. I know that it's not possible to legislate morality, And some people say, we cannot make this illegal because people will always have abortions and we'd just be forcing it to the back alley. No, the reality is, and the New York Times has even reported on this, when abortions aren't available to women because states have a ban, for example, on a second trimester procedure, the New York Times reported, and I was stunned by the fact that they were honest in their reporting, that women accept the pregnancy, carry the child to term, and often end up feeling as though the child has actually, as one woman put it, saved her life. That becoming a mother was the best thing that ever happened to them, even though it seemed like the tragedy of a lifetime at the time that she was considering abortion. 800-811-3003. You know, the abortion industry, as we've talked about in the past, it exists to prey upon the fears of women and the fears of couples. Fear of economic problems in the future if a child comes into the picture. If parenting, I should say, because a child is already in the picture once the pregnancy is there. But fear of loss of reputation. And these things are real. You know, those threats may be very real. There may be the loss of an important relationship if parents say, we will not support you, and if you're going to act like an adult, you may no longer live in this home. If a 16-year-old is given an ultimatum like that from her parents, it's extremely frightening if she has nowhere to go. I don't ever underestimate the fear that women experience, but there are organizations and individuals who will help to meet those challenges with courage, doing the right thing, rather than those who would exploit those fears for profit in most cases, if not all cases. 800-811-3003. Please tell me what you think. I'd love to hear your opinion tonight, yay or nay to the 20-week ban on abortion. It passed the House of Representatives last week, and we don't know if and when it will come for a vote to the Senate. Do you think it should? 800-811-3003. One other story that was in the news this week, to me, is probably the most troubling of all those that we've talked about, whether it would be the abortion ban or abstinence education becoming controversial. Telling kids wait until marriage. Why in the world that would be a controversial message? But it is. Anyway, but this story is even more, I think, more troubling because it's written by a physician, David Grimes. And he is the author of a book that came out late last year, Every Third Woman in America, How Legal Abortion Transformed Our Nation. And he's also a family planning physician. That's how he identifies himself. And he wrote an opinion piece for the Christian Post that ran last week, noting that May is Mental Health Month in the United States, focusing national attention on mental illness because it's so common and causes so much suffering. And he used his platform in the Christian Post to say that abortion, however, is not a problem for the mental health of the women who choose it. And he's carrying the party line forward of the family planning industry in America, blaming the victims, those women and men who are troubled in their mental health, in their emotions after an abortion, to the point where their ability to live life and function and enjoy life might be impaired because of depression or other ways that the mental health problems might play out. No, he says that doesn't happen. He says abortion is a common experience in the lives of American women. Indeed, one in three women will have had one or more abortions before menopause. More than 50 million U.S. women have benefited, he says, from safe legal abortion since Roe v. Wade in 1973. And he says if abortion were linked with later psychological problems, the nation's psychiatrists and psychologists should be inundated by now with women suffering from problems related to earlier abortions. But he said the phantom epidemic never materialized because abortion does not impair women's emotional health. Well, simply because women are not showing up and self-reporting something that has devastated them and which remains cause for embedded shame and something they won't disclose to the very people who could help them. Simply because they're not showing up, reporting that that's the problem, doesn't mean that they're not suffering emotionally or in their mental health. It's very troubling that a physician, again, would not be protecting the lives and the mental health of women, but instead would be perpetuating this line that there's a uniform reaction among women as deeply on something as deeply personal as the abortion decision. I hope that we've stirred you to think more about these things and to meditate on what the truth is. And maybe even if you're so inclined to take action and let your elected representative know where you stand on the abortion ban at 20 weeks. Maybe it might be the most important thing that you would do this week. But I also know that the abstinence message is one that as Christians we can feel absolutely confident with. We can feel absolutely in favor of. And I pray that the Lord would impress it upon you to speak up for those who can't speak for themselves this week in some way. Thank you so much for listening tonight. I do appreciate you being with us. I hope you'll be able to join us each week as we're here presenting interviews with experts on these subjects and taking your phone calls and giving you a chance to have your say as well. You can visit us at cradlemyheart.org for program notes on our upcoming guests and for articles, and we'll link to those that we've been discussing tonight there too. And follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. We'd love to bring you into our circle of friends here at Cradle My Heart. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on myfaithradio.com.